Hanover Research is proud to share with you the Grant Rants NIH series, an 8-part dive into the National Institutes of Health. Every other week, we will examine a different aspect of the NIH for grant seekers, including an overview of institutes and centers, the R series, fellowships and training grants, resubmissions, and more. Check out the Grant Rants podcast page for information on upcoming sessions and follow us on Twitter and LinkedIn. Have a question or topic? Email us directly at podcast@hanoverresearch.com. Welcome back to the Grant Rant. We are in the middle, a little bit past the middle now, of our 8-part series on the NIH. If you are just tuning in, I encourage you to go back and check out the first 5 episodes. We dive into all sorts of topics related to the NIH, including kind of an overview of the NIH, the R series, fellowships and trainings, resubmissions, and then international grants at the NIH. So lots of good information there. But today we're going to be talking about some of the tools that NIH makes available to you as you're thinking about applying to the NIH. So I'm Mallory Waters. I'm the host of the Grant Rant, and I am joined, as always, by grants consultant Tom Kuhn.
Hi again, Mallory. Hi, everybody.
Welcome back, Tom. So today we are going to be talking about something that bleeds into all sorts of other conversations that we've had about the NIH. I think this is going to be a really important episode talking about the different tools that are available to you. So NIH is very sophisticated in terms of the tools that it makes available to researchers, potential applicants, virtually anyone, so the general public, when it comes to preparing to submit a proposal. These tools are, as I said, they're open to anyone, they're free of charge, and they can provide a lot of key information on the priorities of the different institutes and centers and provide you with the guidance you need to take your first steps and kind of decide where you should be within the NIH. So Tom, to get us started, can you give us an overview of NIH Reporter?
Yeah, let's talk about this because it starts with their electronic database, which they renamed REPORT, and it stands for Research Portfolio Online Reporting Tools. So, you know, the federal government has to have an acronym for everything.
NIH
has a cool acronym, REPORT. The second piece, which you mentioned, REPORT-ER, which is basically their database plus the information on expenditures and results. So REPORT-ER is where you go to find a bit more about payline, success, potentials, you know, the metrics, the quantifiable metrics on what's happening at at NIH in terms of their awards. So this report tool really provides access to all of the reports and data and analyses that NIH keeps regarding its research activities. It includes information on the NIH expenditures and the results of their supported research. It's really the electronic database, as I mentioned, of their required data book before the internet. The NIH, as you said, is very sophisticated. They've converted to providing a lot of information, really essentially the basic summary statistics on all of the activity related to their extramural grants, their contract awards, the application success rates, and the organizations that NIH supports, the trainees and fellows that are supported, and the impacts on the national biomedical workforce. So REPORT and REPORT-ER are your tools. We'll talk a little bit more about one of the functional capabilities that's called Matchmaker, but REPORT-ER is really part of that of the larger research portfolio of set of tools, which I said, you know, provides some access to a number of different tools and search functions, reports, data, analyses, and the REPORT-ER is an extension of that. It's really the electronic tool that allows you to, as users, to search the whole repository of intramural and extramural funded research projects and to get access to the publications and other kinds of information resulting from NIH funding. It's a critical tool. It can't be overlooked when you're doing pre-proposal work, when you're trying to understand you know, what's being submitted, who's doing what, you're trying to figure out what the NIH is funding in its active portfolio, right? The critical gap between what's published and what you're applying to do is what's currently going on. And the expectations increasingly by all federal agencies are that you really understand and can convey your work in that broader context. So this kind of tool is critical for you doing that kind of pre-proposal work.
Mm-hmm. And I learned just now on this podcast that I have been using these two terms interchangeably, and I probably shouldn't have been, which is why you always go to Tom with your questions. So report and reporter, two different things, but part of the same overarching suite of electronic tools that are available to you. And, you know, one thing that I want to point out as well is, you know, it's a very, when you go onto this website, it's a very visually friendly tool, very easy to search. I think that they did some upgrades to it, I think maybe 2 years ago. And it's very user friendly now, even for folks who maybe don't like to, you know, dig through data. That's not what this is. This is a very visually appealing way to kind of organize the information. So, Tom, you talked about Matchmaker. You kind of alluded to it, which, you know, I think this is a great functionality of this tool. But can you talk us a little? Can you talk to us a little bit about the kinds of things that you can search for in Matchmaker, and how can that make a PI's outreach and investigation into a potential submission more fruitful?
Yeah, I think the best way to understand Matchmaker is that it's not a dating site. No, I think the best way to understand Matchmaker is really that it's a layer, it's a tool on top of this reporter database, which is part of the big report database. So what this does, and I think you alluded to this, Mallory, how sophisticated and how fun and user-friendly NIH is trying to make these tools, is Matchmaker basically allows you to enter free text. It's been online for years, so it's way ahead of the chat bots that are all of a sudden the rage. You can actually grab your project summary, a section in your proposal, up to 15,000 characters, I believe, and throw it into a single box, and Matchmaker will do the work of scanning report and reporter for you. And it'll bring back, it'll do analysis of key terms and concepts, and then it'll pull back, I believe it's 100 top most similar NIH-funded projects that'll be also ranked by that match score. So you're talking about an awesome way for you to take free text, throw it at NIH, and have NIH bring you back 100 similar funded projects.
Yeah, and it's a lot of text.
Yeah,
you know, it's a you can put your you can put your entire abstract in there and more. And it's really, really, you know, usually when you're putting in search terms, like, you don't have to do Boolean or anything like that here. You can put in your entire abstract.
Yep. In fact, a friend of mine, a colleague at Hanover, Paul Kim, who is a colleague and a consultant with us, we actually developed a concept paper using ChatGPT, and then we put it on Matchmaker to see what would match. So we basically spent 10 minutes talking to a chatbot, which then produced a paper that we stuck in Matchmaker to see what it would bring back. And man, it was interesting.
Yeah. No, it's a really great tool. It's, you know, I'm resisting the urge to, you know, in previous episodes before this NIH series, we would talk about grants and kind of collaborations as like dating, and now we have something called Matchmaker. It's just all too good. Yeah. It's all coming together.
There's elements of it too, right? We keep talking to program officers, but you can't get to them unless you know what's going on. So there's some similarities in terms of that human relationship part.
Sure, absolutely. As Tom said, cannot stress enough the usefulness of these tools. I use these tools constantly when I have, you know, PIs come to me and say, here's my research topic, where should I be looking within NIH? You know, I can use these tools and I can take their abstract and I can say, okay, well, here are the study sections, here are the POs, here are some projects that have been funded. It looks like the majority of projects have been with you know, this institute or this center. Incredibly helpful. Yeah. And definitely something, you know, you should be doing, if not at the very beginning of your, you know, NIH journey, then pretty darn close to that. So the Center for Scientific Review also allows you to kind of search for study sections. So, you know, I know that we've kind of alluded to this in other conversations, but what is the value of looking through the study sections ahead of submissions? Before you jump in, I want to kind of highlight that study sections are different from institutes and centers. These are two distinct things. So kind of walk us through why a PI would want to examine this and kind of, you know, reiterate, you know, what the difference is between an institute and center and a study section.
Yeah, the study sections are really when you start to, like, so these institutes and centers are pretty broad, right? And so they have more specialization as they move towards the mechanisms, their priorities, and the ways in which they're going to fund research to advance those priorities. And the study sections are really the broader groups of individuals that are then broken down into individual study sections that are going to actually be looking at and assessing and providing the program officer and science review officers the kinds of feedback from the objective review that they need to make decisions and recommendations for funding. This is kind of the manual side of the research tools that we talked about, Report, Reporter, and Matchmaker. This is where you can execute. So those other tools are really designed to bring you information. It's all in the past, right? It's up to whatever the current year is, about 6 months, maybe a year behind, because it takes a while for them to normalize and then present that data in a way that it's reliable. And so in this case, really understanding and looking into the study sections is critical. And you can use these tools to do that. We talked about them a little bit, so go through the previous sessions to kind of get more context here. But the reporter will really help you to locate funded applications in your field and to look at and discover which scientific review groups were in those studies and how they were reviewed, the ICs that fund the kind of research that you're putting forward, and the program officers at those ICs and noted in those solicitations that can help you make some key decisions regarding alignment before you start working on the full proposal. Note that you can use the matchmaker function or search text in the reporter to get this kind of information. But another step is really using the CSR's assisted referral tool that they use as the acronym ART. And the idea there is to be able to match your abstract or the specific aims, right, the one page that is on every single NIH proposal, to a specific study section or a scientific review group. The ART function, the tool allows you to enter some text like matchmaker, hit the submit button, and then get a list of the relevant study sections with an indication of whether they're strong or possible. So that way you have some preliminary access to who potentially might be your study group, which can help you inform your project a bit, to tune it right, maybe to use some language correctly. It can inform conversations with program officers about expectations you may have for satisfying the reviewers' concerns and demands, et cetera, as they objectively review your proposal. And also it's an opportunity for you to better understand where and how you might make recommendations to where you want your proposal assigned for review. So this third piece is using the assignment request form that you talked about earlier, Mallory. It's really an opportunity for you to suggest assignment to a particular institute and even into a particular study group and review group. And really to inform not only the staff and the receipt and referrals office, but as they transfer that to the IC and the relevant scientific review officer and program officers, that they have this indication. These recommendations, this form does not go to the reviewers. It gets taken off at the CSR level, and the program officers will see it, but no one else will. And nevertheless, you never want to request specific reviewers, but this is an opportunity for you to, as Mallory talked about earlier, to identify conflicts and suggest the expertise that you think you need to get an objective and qualified review of your proposal.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I've been spending time trying to come up with, you know, something involving art and matchmaking and, you know, trying to come up with like a clever saying. I have failed over here. But, you know, there's just so much great stuff available to you. You know, when you go on to the reporter website, you'll have, you know, you can take a look and see active funding by state. You can click on a state and kind of see what's being funded within your area. You can see, you can take a look at the institutes and centers and see what their active projects are, and you can go on there and see clearly why I've been talking about NCI being the most competitive. They also have the largest portfolio right now. You can do advanced project search. You can go to Matchmaker. You can look at publications. There's just so much great stuff here, and you know, you can also export these things. So if you're very skilled at, you know, Excel and you want to do some cool pivot tables and kind of things within Excel, then you can do that too. You can export your findings and then use that to kind of categorize, you know, the information that you have. So there's just a lot of great things here, and it's something that is, you know, it would be a shame to not take advantage of it, a shame to not spend some time looking at it and kind of figuring out how this data can, you know, really benefit you.
And I would encourage you, yeah, you're absolutely right. And I would encourage you to do this work before you talk to your program officer. This level of intel and information is just going to make you smarter in terms of the approach. You're going to ask better questions. You're going to come up with you're going to solve issues for yourself before you talk to them. So they're going to have, you know, the program officers love when you're not asking basic questions, when it's clear that you've done your homework and you're specific. And these tools are critical ways for you to get that information you need to be more, you know, to more aggressive, smarter, and more effective in your connections.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's actually, you know, one of the places where you find out who your program officer should be. There is rarely an instance where I have done, you know, some of this matchmaking and, you know, that sort of thing to find the program officers and send it back to a PI and said, here's their bio. Here's what they focus on. Does this look right? And they'll say, yes, this is exactly where I should be. That's how good the system is. That's not me being great. That's the system. That's how great this system is. You know, take advantage of it so that when you go to the PO, you're talking to the right person. Another thing that I get, another question that I get a lot, is, you know, okay, I've found this information. I've seen the abstracts of similarly funded projects. Can I see a full application? So does NIH provide full applications as, examples for interested PIs?
Yeah, this is a sticky question. And the general answer is no, NIH does not directly, because NIH and I think everyone here would agree that except for certain types of information that may be considered proprietary or private, NIH is in the business of protecting that information, right? They don't want to release a lot of the work that you're doing, which is very, very future forward, right? It's not developed yet. So your ideas are in there. They're still raw. The data's in there. It's still raw. And there's a lot of opportunities that, you know, through Freedom of Information Acts and others, people would try to get after this information. And NIH is not in the real business of disclosing this information directly. They really are, even with the FOIA requirements, they're very cognizant of the need to redact and remove specialized information. The statutes and policies that make the information required to be public are really intended to foster an open system of government and accountability for governmental programs and expenditures. And so a lot of the information that they do provide through Reporter on that database are really designed to help satisfy that. That said, some ICs, and I know that National Institutes of Infectious and Allergies, I may be getting NAIAD wrong.
I should have, you know, Tom, we should have started this entire series quizzing you on what each one of the IC acronyms stand for. It's the National Institute of Allergies and Infectious Diseases.
Yeah. So I even got the acronym wrong in my notes here.
That's okay.
Yeah. As long as I've been in this space, I'm still not a fan of acronyms. In fact, if I get involved in helping you work on a proposal, I'm always going to say two or three, because as I've been a reviewer so long, you know, you got to remember reviewers are looking at 7 or 8 proposals at once, and holding acronyms in your mind is just very difficult. So why burden them? Anyway, that's a separate bit of advice. They don't really publish it. That being said, the NIH in general, but different ICs, once again, they're fairly independent. They're working at their own pace to be helpful to program officers. And in the case where they do provide on their website actual full proposals, these have only been done at the as volunteered by the PI. Only the PI can authorize its information, his or hers, from being, you know, in the proposal being shared. And they do this as a service. Now, let me caveat that. It's always critical that you're following the specific mechanism and the guidance in there as you apply. A lot of these, you know, we see the parent notices and the individual funding notices make a lot of, they evolve over time, sometimes even annually or even between the submission deadlines. So it's going to be critically important, although you look at a sample project, to remember two things. One is that the structure and alignment may not be correct for the proposal you're after. And two, you're under the same obligations regarding copyright and citations that you would be if this was a published document. And NIH, through its various tools, including optical character scans, can tell as you submit if there's significant overlap between a proposal and especially one that's on one of their websites. So they do check for that kind of thing. But more importantly, because we know everybody here has the kind of integrity you need, it's really a matter of not leveraging a previous successful proposal, no matter how written, to be the guideline for how you submit, to make sure first that you're being responsive in your proposal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's critical. These are good examples of kind of, okay, this is the kind of research maybe that NIH was, you know, interested in. Let me see how they, you know, how complete their, you know, significance is and that sort of mm-hmm. thing. They're good. Yeah. They're good for those kinds of takeaways. Do not use them as templates for how you should draft your proposal. Because as Tom said, these, you know, oftentimes these are older proposals. They are not reflective of current practice and kind of the way that the current structure is. Some of them may be from before NIH did their new resubmission policy. So the introduction to the resubmission may be formatted differently. You may see highlights in the, you know, proposal and, you know, you're not required to do that anymore. So just take that with a grain of salt. The other thing that I wanted that I would want to point out is this is not a resource directly from NIH per se, but there is sort of a movement out in academia, both in terms of the medical field and in, you know, more of the basic science fields as well, to, you know, provide repositories of, you know, funded and unfunded grant proposals to kind of share, you know, share the science and kind of share this, you know, information. There is a website. It is funded by IMLS, so the Institute of Museum and Library Services, as well as the Moore Foundation. It's called ogrants.org. which stands for Open Grants. And not only does it have NIH grants on there, but it has a lot of other funders as well. And you can take a look there. To Tom's point, you will see that many of what is on there are from 2015, 2016, older grants. So again, not the gold standard, but definitely helpful in terms of just getting more information out there and kind of starting this trend. It's just another crayon within your crayon box. And, you know, to fund a proposal, you have to use a lot of different colors and shading. And that may be the worst analogy I've ever come up with on this podcast, but it's out there now. So, Tom, just one quick note before we go. You know, I do want to go back to your acronym. mini rant there. You know, I do want to say, you know, people may have brushed past it, but it is something that can be, you know, mentally draining. You know, one of the things that you always want to do when you're submitting proposals is make sure that you're making it easy for the folks who are going to be reading it. They're reading a lot of proposals. They're reading through a lot of different proposals, and you want to make sure that you're making it easy for them. And so, especially, I mean, I've seen some acronyms that are capitalizing random letters in a word to make it work and, you know, things like that. You know, just make sure, you know, as Tom said, that you're being very judicious with how you are implementing those things, because the whole goal here is to make it easy for the folks who are going to be scoring your proposal to read your proposal and understand it. So the takeaway from today's episode, definitely go onto the NIH website. Reporter is an excellent online tool space for you. It has the matchmaker link, also looking at the assisted referral tool ART. And then, you know, to a less sophisticated degree, spending some time on those institute and center websites. You know, take a look at what their priorities are. They will have, you know, their, you know, strategic plans and kind of the goals. Take a look at those. You can also find, you know, a lot of interesting publications on there from, you know, recent research and, you know, things like that. So spend some time there, familiarize yourself with, you know, the NIH and the Institute and the center where you're going to most likely be, and then use these other tools to find the program officer and have that conversation. Thank you all so much for joining us. If you haven't listened to the other episodes, go back and listen to those. They're very helpful. Our next episode is going to be talking about early career faculty and kind of the different opportunities and assets that are available at NIH if you are early career. So definitely check that out. And we hope to hear from you if you have any questions or any comments or any suggestions for things that you would like to hear more about. You can always feel free to reach us at podcast@hanoverresearch.com. We'll catch you next time.